today on The Travel Guys.
Soon, you'll be able to get your favorite Starbucks beverage on a cruise ship in the middle of the ocean.
The TSA might be getting a little more touchy-feely soon.
We'll take you on an adventure to Hawaii and tell you about great places to visit most travelers have never heard of.
Including a farm where they grow chocolate and a ranch where they raise seahorses.
All that and more today on The Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. I'm a traveling man, the king of the road.
Hit the road, Jack.
Riding on the city of New Orleans.
Get your kicks out on Route 66. Let it roll.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Travel Guys Radio Show. So great to have you with us today. I'm Tom Romano, along with Sports Leisure Vacations' Mark Hoffman. As Mark mentioned at the head of the program, it's off to an adventure to Hawaii. And we're going to stop in at some unusual locations and visit with some folks along the way and kind of stop in at some of the places that Mark takes his travelers along with Sports Leisure Vacations. But before we do that, of course, the beginning of the program, it's always travel news headlines time, so let's jump right into it. The travel news music. Dun 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 dun. Here's Mark.
One if by land, two if by mocha cappuccino. Starbucks, yes indeed, is coming to the high seas. The first outlet will be on the Allure, a ship operated by Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines. The outlet will be staffed with Starbucks-trained baristas and offer a full line of Starbucks drinks. The Allure will also have the first guest store at sea, a coach store, and a Johnny Rockets burger eatery. In the showroom will be Chicago the Musical. Royal Caribbean is also working with DreamWorks Animation to bring movie characters such as Shrek to their ships.
I can taste the double vanilla mocha latte super duper special. Wow, I wonder what it will cost in the middle of the ocean.
As mentioned a couple of months ago, phones that open your hotel room are coming and coming soon. A test is underway at the Clarion Hotel in Stockholm to use mobile phones to check in and check out and use the phone as a room key. A number of guests at the hotel will be provided with phones equipped with special technology. Those clients will not only be able to reserve their rooms and receive confirmation on the devices, they will have the option of checking in even before arriving at the hotel and have their electronic room key ready in the phone when they get there. When they leave, they check out using their phone, and the electronic key is automatically canceled. Which I guess begs the question, how do you check into your room in advance if you don't get the special phone until you check in?
Perhaps they send you the phone in advance. I don't know.
When does technology become more trouble than it's worth? I guess we'll see soon. And speaking of technology, Southwest is charging $5 to log on in flight. Southwest Airlines has chosen a flat $5 rate as an introductory price to log on to the net in flight regardless of flight length. They now have 32 Wi-Fi-enabled planes, plan to have 60 Wi-Fi aircraft by year's end, and outfit the entire fleet of 342 planes by the end of 2012. If you're still following through all of those numbers, Southwest will even email passengers prior to their flight if the plane they are flying on is equipped with Wi-Fi. And this is a pretty significant price point because most of the other carriers who are equipping their planes with Wi-Fi connectability are charging as much as $12.95 for flights over 3 hours. So it looks like maybe Southwest might be beating the competition to the punch once again. The TSA is going to touch you in places they didn't touch you before. The TSA has introduced a new type of pat-down at all of the nation's airports, effective this past week. The pat-down searches will include over-the-clothes searches of breast and genital areas and will be administered to flyers who refuse full-body X-ray scans. Kate Henney of FlyerRights.org says the new pat-downs are close to, quote, foreplay, end quote.
So you can drop this in now in conversation. Hey, I'm headed to the airport, going to stop into the TSA line. Maybe I'll get lucky.
Perhaps this is happening because many travelers are refusing to go through the new body scanners that went into effect at airports after that bombing incident last Christmas. Remember the guy who put the explosives in his underwear and ended up without, well, never mind. Anyways, it wasn't successful. And finally, seriously, folks, this story is not a crock. although it is about one, a small plane carrying 20 people, including the British pilot, crashed on a flight from Kinshasa in the African Congo to a nearby regional airport. Now, here's where the story gets a little more interesting. There was only one survivor on the crash who shared his story of what happened. Apparently, someone brought a crocodile in his carry-on bag, a large carry-on bag, and it managed to chew its way out during the flight. The passengers panicked when they saw the croc and fled towards the cockpit, throwing the small turboprop out of balance, causing it to crash.
Wow, that is a tragic story with only one survivor. But, Mark, I have to ask the question, did the crocodile survive the crash?
Well, Tom, it says here the croc survived the crash but was later killed with a machete by rescuers sifting through the wreckage.
I have to say that's one of the most unusual stories I've heard in a while.
And that's the travel news for this week. Tom, we have truly had a magnificent time here in Kauai, Oahu, and on the Big Island of Hawaii in the last 10 days. And when we come back after the break, we are going to share with folks some of the incredibly wonderful, off-the-beaten-track places that we have visited in Hawaii during our stay here. We're going to take you to the island of Kauai so that you can visit a chocolate farm with us. And we're going to take you to the Big Island to take you to a seahorse ranch and also to the only commercial vanilla farm in the United States. We might even tell you about the best place to get a great burger along the way. We are going to Hawaii, yes, to the islands, when we come back right after this break. You're listening to The Travel Guys with Tom Arano and Mark Hoffman on News Talk 1530 KFBK.
For the 1530 KFBK.
Tom, we're here on the island of Kauai, the Garden Island. I'm with Will Lydgate. Will, tell us a little bit about the chocolate farm here.
Well, we're having a lot of fun. We're growing chocolate. We're tasting chocolate. We're tasting fruits that are in season. We just had a great time on a tour.
The chocolate farm is how many years old? How many years have you been growing chocolate here?
Well, we've been growing chocolate only about 8 years. So actually, as far as the chocolate world goes at large, we're fairly new. But our trees are mature and producing, and we're trying to get lots of other people to grow chocolate so we can have a sustainable chocolate industry.
Now, that's a really interesting part of this whole thing, is that you're growing trees and you're giving other people your chocolate trees to get them to grow chocolate, so that you'll have a bigger industry,
a
co-op in essence.
Well, the co-op and the industry supports our islands. We don't just want to export all the business and all the money to corporations. We want it to be family-owned. You know, we care about history, and we want people's kids here to be able to make money here and go to college. And we lost all of our agriculture, right? Remember Hawaii?
Pineapples and
tropical pineapples, sugarcane. Where did they go? They're gone. The industry fell out, so we're looking for new crops. Chocolate has been grown throughout much of the world. Turns out it grows great in Hawaii, which is actually also the United States. This is USA chocolate. We've got sugar. We've got chocolate. It's in a very exciting new growth industry.
And this, in Hawaii, as you mentioned, because there was all the sugar cane and pineapple, there really are a lot of agricultural areas that might be able to produce a lot of the things that wouldn't have to be brought from 3,000 miles away.
Right. Well, everything gets shipped here. It's ridiculous. We've got huge tracts of ag land, unused, growing, nothing, weeds. And it's time to plant those with chocolate, I think.
And the chocolate farm here, in addition to people learning about chocolate, you've incorporated a way for people to learn about some of the native plants and things also.
Yeah, well, I mean, with what we do, everything we do is so family-oriented. I mean, when we have people on our farm, they're not like a number. You know, they're a person. And if I would have a friend over, I'd say, hey, look, try this fruit, and here, do this. And people would just ask us questions, and we answered the questions. And what we got out of it was a tour.
What helped you decide to get into growing chocolate?
Well, it was actually kind of an accident. We had had we were growing a crop called Ava, which apparently was going to be the next big thing, and every single one got killed by a bug that's native to Kauai. It was a big disaster, and we threw our hands up and we said, forget this farming stuff. And you all know how to make a small fortune as a farmer, right? Have you ever heard how to make a small fortune as a farmer?
How do you make a small fortune as a farmer?
Start with a large fortune. That's true. True story. And so we just planted a couple chocolate trees. Actually, my father, Tony, planted a couple chocolate trees. We found that they did well, and we planted more, and pretty soon we were off and running.
And so now you're offering tours just to groups. This is not something that's really open on a public basis, or do you do this for the members of the public?
No, actually, we also do it for the members of the public, custom tour groups, and also we have 3 regular tours a week. And the tour started out of workshops for the public just to teach people how to grow chocolate, but then evolved into a really fun visitor activity.
And this is very much a part, as you kind of explained at the beginning of our tour, part of a movement here in the islands to grow some more sustainable foods, to produce more sustainable foods here in the islands. But also it strikes me, we're taking advantage of this as another, a new arm of tourism.
Right.
And a new way to show people more of the real Hawaii, so to speak.
Right. Well, when you're from a place, you know that place like the back of your hand. You know where the swimming holes are. You know where the good fruit trees are. So here we are right now doing this interview in Hawaii. It's green. Sky is blue. The breeze is blowing. Plants grow great here. Everything grows great here. So we're just trying to share what's really here with the visitor, you know, with the friends that come. People come and they want to see what's real. They want to know our place like they know their place. So I completely agree. The corporate tour thing is bogus.
Yeah, it's all over.
It's all over. It's done. People don't want that anymore. They don't want, you know, tours outsourced, you know.
So Steelgrass Chocolate, where does that name come from?
Steelgrass Chocolate. Actually, Steelgrass, the name for our farm, came from a name for bamboo. We have a lot of bamboo planted as well as chocolate, and Steelgrass, nickname for bamboo, Steelgrass, because steel is, bamboo is strong like the metal steel and flexible like grass. It's also, bamboo's a member of the grass family, so the name came from bamboo. We also grow bamboo for sustainable buildings.
Cool. Well, if folks are interested in the in learning more about Steelgrass Chocolate, they can find you on the web at?
Yeah, www.steelgrass.org. That's steel like the metal and grass like the green grass of home. Steelgrass.org.
Okay, steelgrass.org. Or they can go to travelguysradio.com where they can find all of the websites for all of the guests on today's program. Will, thank you very much for sharing a little bit with us about the chocolate farm today.
Well, aloha, Mark. Thanks for coming, and hope to see you and your friends here again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you, Will. So, folks, what did you think about the chocolate farm today?
Whoa, it sounds like everybody's having a really good time. You're listening to the Travel Guys on News Talk 1530 KFBK, and we're going to do some more island hopping. Let's jump now from the island of Kauai over to the Big Island and hook up with Mark and see what he has for us there. Mark?
Tom, I'm here with Dale
Mehiula.
Mehiula. Dale is a longtime bartender at Drysdale's 2 here in Kailua, and which is home of the best burger anywhere in the islands. Wouldn't you say, Dale?
Oh, thank you very much. You're right.
So Don Drysdale came here, you said, originally from Maui?
No, they opened in Maui originally in the 70s in Lahaina. And the first club here was Club 53 in Kailua Kona, in the Kona Shopping Center.
Down by the waterfront.
Right on the water. I believe 1981, thereabouts. And we're at Drysdale's 2, which is circa 1985 or so, roughly.
And for the folks at home in Sacramento, this is the name of the shopping center this is in is?
Keoho Shopping Center.
Yeah.
And Ginger Drysdale is the owner.
And Ginger is Don Drysdale's wife.
First wife.
First wife, yes. And her daughter, Kelly?
Kelly is a manager here. And Mike Waldman is general manager.
So Don has not been with us for a number of years, but this is still very much a sports bar.
Right, and we have some nice pictures people really enjoy seeing.
Now, you were telling me Don had originally had a business partner here. Partner when he came to Lahaina?
Right. I believe his name was Jack Myers.
And the wall is still adorned with pictures of Don. And
very interesting pictures up there, old-time pictures with movie stars and Sinatra and things like that.
For West Coast baseball fans, perhaps not Dodger fans, but at least for Giant fans, it's a big, big time of the year. The Giants had finally won their first championship after many, 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 many years.
Right.
Did you have any of that celebration going on here?
Oh, yeah. We had a lot of San Francisco fans here. The Texans were pretty quiet. Yeah.
Imagine Giant fans celebrating in a Dodger sanctuary, so to speak.
Well, yep, that's exactly what happened.
All right, so Dale, what makes the hamburgers so good here at Drysdale's?
Our quality of meat and our cooks—they really take pride in their work.
I mean, even when they were down on the water, they were the best burgers. Now, when they're up here in the shopping center, they're the best burgers.
I'll tell you, it's most of the same cooks from downtown.
Really?
Right. They've been with us that long.
Dale, thank you. Thanks for a couple minutes of your time today.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Coming up, Seahorse Ranch, Vanilla Farm, and more magic from Hawaii here on The Travel Guys with Mark Hoffman on News Talk 1530 KFBK. Don't forget now, you can track all of The Travel Guys' activities at TravelGuysRadio.com. Before we reconnect with Mark Hoffman over in Hawaii and visit a seahorse ranch and a vanilla farm, let's go back and revisit one of our interviews with John Holloway from Travel Outfitters. This is the one that has to do with saving money on packing lightly and luggage. Listen in. You're listening to the Travel Guys here on News Talk 1530 KFBK, and who's back, Mark?
It is our travel gadget guy, John Holloway from Travel Outfitters, from Holloway Travel Outfitters.
Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, exactly.
John had a large cart that he had to use to bring everything in with him today.
Well, at least it's not part of the airplane like he did the last time that he was here. So today we're going to talk about luggage, which has always been an important subject for travelers, but is probably way more important now that airlines are charging by the piece.
Right.
And also are being a lot more particular about the weight.
Absolutely.
So, and some empty suitcases, as people have discovered, can weigh as much as 16 or 17 pounds. I mean, even a medium-sized empty suitcase.
That's right. And, you know, well, that's sort of the yesterday. We brought in one old one just to compare and contrast.
That's kind of cool. That looks like an old, kind of like an old Pullman bag almost. You know what they would say? Like an old, this looks like it's something right out of the movie.
Right.
It's made out of plywood, I do believe, with large metal parts, brown. It looks like something that you would see in a 1947 Albert Hitchcock movie.
It does. It looks like something. It does. It looks like something would come right out of Psycho.
We threw some stickers on it to give it its vintage look. But the weight of that thing would, you know, you'd be over 50 pounds without putting much more than a couple pairs of shoes and a hardcover book in there.
Yeah.
So what they've done today is they've taken out all that full frame and just framed the outside of the bag and left it soft side and front and back to lighten them up. And that's why we brought a lot of these here today to show people.
Well,
show
these all look like bags that are, if I'm not, correct me if I'm wrong, these are all bags that can be carried on board the airplane.
Yeah, I brought all my carry-ons.
At least in the United, for domestic travel.
That's right. And there's such a push to do that to avoid the check-in fees.
So. Well, absolutely. Of course, you know, there's always the challenge, too, because you can't take more than 3 ounces of something on the airplane. I don't know about a lot of travelers, but I have two ways to pack. If I'm going through security and not checking a bag, or if I'm going through security and checking a bag.
Right.
So I literally have two completely different shaving kits that I travel with, depending
sure.
on the circumstance. So tell us about some of these bags that you've got here, John.
Okay. And
this one's kind of psychedelic. It's got...
It is. You can't miss this. It's an artist developed this hard-side suitcase with named Brito is his name. Apparently, he's a Brazilian gentleman. Has been in the Louvre and so on. But this will help you spot your bag, undoubtedly.
That's a Brazilian gentleman that's been in the Louvre. Somewhere there's a comment in there, and I don't know how much. It almost sounds nasty.
Yeah. Well, it's almost too pretty to check. We have covers for those folks that don't want to scratch up their piece of artwork.
You're basically kind of a psychedelic with the flowers and the polka dots.
Wait a minute. You have covers for the suitcase?
Yes.
Tom, you've got, you know, two daughters. I mean, is this something that they would travel with?
You know, absolutely. Actually, my youngest daughter, she would.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something that stands out and is totally different.
Well, you get a pretty bag and then you cover it. It's sort of ironic, but the clear covers will protect that piece. So I brought in the hard side to show you. They're using fancy plastics, ABS, and polycarbonates to keep these things super light. So these 22-inch carry-ons weigh just over 6 pounds.
Yeah, this is... Here, Tom, look at this.
Let me see.
I mean, literally, I can hand this over to you with just one hand.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's very light.
Light. If that's a terrific, terrific.
And it's got four wheels. And I wanted to, you know, there are a lot of configurations we brought today, and it's kind of tough. We're trying to be, you know.
How do you feel about this wheel thing of the what is it, ergonomic? Or how do they, what do they say, call that?
Yeah.
Where the wheels will go any direction?
Right, directional. And so four wheels can go anywhere. So in a tight elevator, it's nice. And, you know, in the busy lines at the airport, you can maneuver them easy.
I see it has a lock on it, John. I mean, that's the, how do you deal with that? Because there's, like, no locking luggage anymore.
Right.
Of course, this is a carry-on. I mean, carry-ons, can they be locked?
Yeah, you can lock. And you can lock the checked bags, too. I'm glad you brought that up, Tom. That has the TSA-approved logo icon on that lock. So that tells the TSA officials that, well, they have the keys for these.
Oh, I see.
If that's
okay.
any comfort to us, their security officials can get in our bag.
Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano here with you this afternoon on the Travel Guys on News Talk 1530 KFBK. John Holloway is with us, and we're talking luggage today, which is tremendously important. We're talking basically about carry-on bags. John, you have an example of a bag that I bought from you a couple of years ago.
Yep.
Actually, I bought two of these, one this size and one larger. And this is, quote, lifetime luggage,
it,
which is a little bit of a stretch. I mean, the reality is, as we were talking before we went on the air, last year I flew just a little under 200,000 miles.
Right.
And this bag went with me. Well, not this bag, but a bag just like it went with me on most of those trips.
Right.
And so it's now, I'm 2 years into it, and it's stained. It's the worst for wear, but it's intact.
Yeah. Well, we plan on getting... You know, the warranties are kind of a funny thing. It's lifetime of the bag, so sometimes it's implied maybe it's our lifetime. But so for you, Mark, the lifetime of that bag is a little shorter than somebody who travels once a year.
Yeah, exactly. Because for some people, literally, if you took two trips a year, this bag would last you a lifetime.
Yeah. Maybe they kind of judge it like you do an automobile. It's either, 10 years or, 60,000 miles.
It's sort of like
when
that.
When Mark flies 100,000 miles in a year, he exhausts his...
Well, this is Briggs and Riley, which is kind of like Romano and Hoffman. I mean, anytime you get two names together, I think you're in good shape.
Well, and really what I wanted to show with this is they'll cover any damage. So most warranties on many luggage will not cover airline damage. There's a small caveat on the bottom of these tags. So
the airlines won't cover their own damage, and the people that made the bag won't cover the damage.
Well, except for Briggs and Riley. They're going to cover anything that happens to that bag, including airline damage. And who else does it typically?
And you pay a little more. You kind of have to decide with luggage. You got two options. One is that you get some. I don't think pretty is out of the question. I mean, if you're looking for boutique and luggage, that's a stretch because it's not going
to
hold
up. Well, luggage used to be, very the look of your luggage and all of that was, being fashionable and so forth was pretty important, but not anymore.
Now it's get you there. And it's get your stuff. Your luggage is, listen, folks who travel, your luggage is to protect your stuff. And someday we should talk about things that you can do to protect your stuff inside your luggage, because that would be a whole other segment.
Right.
Okay. So, John, if folks are interested in luggage, and obviously you've got a wide array of luggage at your store, also available at your website online.
Yes.
So besides going to sportsleisure.com and seeing the things that we're talking about here today, they could go to packinglight.com, L-I-T-E.
L-I-G-H-T.
L-I-G-H-T. Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Packinglight.com and see some of these things, or they can visit you in your store on Fulton Avenue.
Yeah, we would appreciate that very much. And we have a variety of luggage to sell.
John Holloway with us from Holloway's Travel Outfitters with us here on the Travel Guys.
Thanks, Mark. And through the magic of radio, right after the news break, we'll head back to Hawaii, check out a seahorse ranch and a vanilla farm. All of that and more coming up on the Travel Guys on News Talk 1530 KFBK. Hi there, this is Tom Romano. We are the Travel Guys on News Talk 1530 KFBK. I'm with Mark Hoffman of Sports Leisure Vacation, and our show today is pretty much exclusively about the islands of Hawaii. And Mark is taking us to different places and different things that, perhaps we've never run across if you've ever visited to Hawaii. And if you plan to go, there's some really unique and different kinds of things that a lot of people don't know about. For example, a seahorse ranch on the Big Island of Hawaii. Let's check in with Mark.
Tom, I'm with Carol Cozy of the Ocean Rider Seahorse Ranch here in Kona. And, Carol, I've been coming to your ranch with groups for 4 or 5 years. I have a gazillion, trillion questions to ask you, but I really am in great admiration of the work that you guys are doing here. This is like the neatest, coolest, most unique spot on the whole planet. What gave you the idea? What was the inspiration?
Well, first, thank you very much. The inspiration came from working many, many years in South America running shrimp hatcheries. And these hatcheries were located in some of the most pristine parts of countries like Ecuador. And during that time, I saw so much devastation to the marine environment. Thousands of pounds of mahi-mahi coming out of the ocean, marlin, most of it going to cat food. And devastation from fish meal plants, and also devastation to the Amazon. You'd visit a place 1 year, you'd see a beautiful rainforest. You'd come back the next year, it'd be gone. And I quickly began to realize that I was one of the few people actually seeing this devastation going on. And I wondered, you know, what's driving it? And, of course, we all know the answer to that. It's us. So I felt motivated to do something different that would help motivate people to get involved in caring about the ocean. And I thought, well, you know, what can I do? I don't have very much money, but I have been able to save some money during my work, you know, in South America for the last 10 years. And I have some skills, and my husband has some skills as well. And I thought, well, why don't we start a seahorse farm? The seahorse is just about extinct in the ocean because of habitat pollution, overfishing for pets and medicine. And I thought the seahorse is an animal that's used in the pet trade. About 1 million per year at that time were taken out of the ocean for pets. And I thought, if I can educate that group of people into buying a seahorse that comes from a farm rather than the ocean, they will start to get the idea that it's better to leave the ocean alone and get your pets from a farm because they're going to be better. So we started our project, and we got our first seahorses on the market about a year after we started. And the first people that bought them said, oh, my gosh, they're a better pet. They don't die. They live. They eat frozen shrimp. They don't have disease because a wild seahorse lasts about maybe a month. And our seahorses so far today are living 10, 12 years and counting.
So really your mission here is kind of multifaceted. You have your own personal mission, and plus you're kind of helping to rehabilitate the seahorse population and look at some other species and things here that are there's some other exciting things going on here at the Seahorse Ranch.
There's a lot of things. You know, with the first seahorses, we took the number of 1 million consumed by the pet trade down to 20,000. And those can all be produced right here. So we thought, well, why don't we do the same thing for other animals that are threatened in the ocean?
And seahorses can't be legally kept as pets everywhere? Is that correct?
They are listed as a CITES II, Appendix 2 animal, which means if they come from a managed resource, you can trade them. You can farm them, you can sell them, you can have them as a pet. So the seahorse comes underneath that jurisdiction or that umbrella. So as a farm, we can, you know, sell our seahorses as pets to the pet trade. So we started to realize we could breed other animals for the pet trade and take the pressure off the oceans in that way. So we started with the dragons. We're still working on that. We have leafy and weedy sea dragons here. And
now, people who are listening are going to think, when you talked about leafy and weedy sea dragons, they're going to think you're talking about seaweed. And if they were here and they saw these magnificent creatures, or if they've been lucky enough to see one in an aquarium, they would know that that's really a very accurate description of what they look like. But they are really, I've watched these grow and mature here the last few years, and it's really quite, they're an amazing creature.
Yeah, I call them the Picasso of the sea. I mean, they're just so extraordinary.
They're beautiful.
Yeah.
They're absolutely beautiful.
And they're pretty much gone in the ocean. The Australian government gives one permit to one person once a year to take one pregnant male out of the ocean. And those offspring are sold to public aquariums around the world for $10,000 to $20,000 per dragon. So our program here is designed to domesticate the dragon and sell them to public aquariums in hope that they will live their lifespan out in captivity, which is probably about 25 years. So that'll take the pressure off that species.
So when visitors come here to Ocean Rider, they are treated to roughly an hour-long tour that really educates them as to how you produce the seahorses, how they could get one as a pet, how they can all they also get a chance to see the dragons and learn about some of the other unique species that you have here and on display that you can tell folks about.
Yeah, we're working now with the Hawaiian reef fish because our reefs here in Hawaii are being pillaged by collectors for the pet trade. 2 to 10 million per year are being taken off our reefs in Hawaii for pets. And we figured that's got to stop. How are we going to stop it? You know, politics are difficult in Hawaii. So we thought, let's get them on the market. Let's breed these fish so we can offer the pet trade a farm-raised yellow tang instead of one from the wild. And that way, they'll take the pressure off our reefs here in Hawaii and around the world, and they'll buy them from the farm, and they'll be a better pet. So that project is very challenging. These fish are hard to get to breed, and when they're born, they are so tiny that they eat about a 5 to 10 micron size baby copepod. So that's a project. We're working on it. It's going to take some time. And in the meantime, we are working very hard to educate people about ocean conservation in kind of a different way. What we're saying is don't stop eating fish. enjoy fish, but make sure it's coming from a manageable resource. You know, follow the seafood watch list put out by the Monterey Bay Aquarium.
So folks who come here to the Ocean Rider Seahorse Ranch, which is, as you can hear an airplane taking off in the background, is just in the shadows of the airport here on the Kona Coast on the Big Island of Hawaii, they're not only going to learn about the seahorses, about how to take care of them, and also learn some important lessons about what's going on in the ocean. And just in listening to the guy today, it's obvious that you're getting even more of a slant towards trying to educate people, maybe perhaps even just one small group at a time, of the importance of some of these issues.
Yeah, it's a real grassroots movement. We want people to go home and think about their experience here and get involved in a way that means, let's clean up my backyard. Where is that? You know, where do my waterways go? Let's clean that up first. Let's stop, you know, polluting and dumping and clean up my coral reef, my seagrass bed. And bring that nursery ground back to life so the fish can come there, they can spawn again, and they can grow up and be part of a managed fisheries.
Carol, if folks want to come to the Ocean Rider Seahorse Ranch, tell them a little bit about, let's give them a website, and how much is the tour?
Our website is seahorse.com, which is, you know, pretty hard.
Pretty easy to read.
Pretty easy to read,
yeah.
Remember. And our price is $35 per person. Children 4 through 9 are $25. And our tours run at 10, 12, and 2, Monday through Friday.
And if you don't come to the Ocean Rider Seahorse Ranch when you're on the Kona Coast, you have and had the opportunity to have a live seahorse wrapped around one of the fingers of your hand, you will have missed truly a life experience. So thank you so much for your time today, Carol. I really appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you, Mark, for supporting us through the years.
You're
I
welcome.
Can't tell you how much we appreciate that.
You're very welcome. Thanks.
That was the travel guy, Mark Hoffman, from Sports Leisure Vacations. And I hate to say it, folks, but only on this radio program are you going to hear really unique interviews like that. Mark's going to take us to another spot on the Big Island that is also very unique, the very first vanilla factory in the U.S. That's coming up right here on News Talk 1530 KFBK, and more with the Travel Guys. You're listening to the Travel Guys on News Talk 1530 KFBK on our special Hawaii show. We've got one more stop. Mark, where are we now?
Tom, we're sitting here on the Big Island of Hawaii with, and I'm with Jim Redekop, who is owner, along with his wife, Tracy, of the Hawaiian Vanilla Company. So, Jim, tell me a little bit about the only commercial vanilla production facility in the country. Is that kind of right?
Yeah, that's kind of right. We're the first commercial vanilla operation in the USA. And the real key and golden part to what we do is that it's a family business, and all of our children are involved in the day-to-day operations. It's a culinary destination where you come and learn about vanilla. We try to fill all five senses where you're hearing our story, you're feeling the vanilla beans, you're smelling them, you're tasting them in dishes. And the best part is when you leave, you're able to purchase one of the products that are handmade here in small batches right here on the farm.
Now, is this an experience that's open to, can independent travelers come here, or do they have to come with some sort of reservation or with a group?
Well, it's open to the public. And at HawaiianVanilla.com, under the tour section, it really spells out each one of the culinary events that we have each day. A morning tasting, which is more on the culinary aspects of vanilla. Our most popular vanilla experience luncheon from 12:30 to 2. We have a farm tour only that starts at 1, and then afternoon tea at 3, which is very intimate and very popular.
So this is something that's available to folks every day. So if they go online, they could come here and have a similar experience to what our group of folks from Sacramento had today, which included a wonderful luncheon. And if there's anything better than vanilla lemonade, I can't imagine what it could possibly be. This is really a special place. How did you get started in this? I know you're now 12 years into this experience?
14 years total. This all started from a dinner conversation when the kids were really young, and we made a decision that we wanted to raise them in a rural environment. We didn't know what we were going to grow, but my mother-in-law, who's an orchid lover, said, well, how about vanilla? I didn't know vanilla was an orchid. I didn't know it bloomed for one day and then
each
blossom.
Yeah, until I met you, I didn't know vanilla was an orchid either.
And so from there, we started to ask ourselves, okay, what if we did this? And what if we created this type of experience to bring people out to the farm? And how would that look? And so we started just to live out our dreams and our visions, and those became very profitable, and we're still here today and doing better and better and better.
So the business has turned out to be, from a business point of view, it has turned out to be a good decision?
a really great decision. My children are now older, and seeing what it's done to them, I mean, you know, they've seen us at our best and our worst, and they've learned from that. And to have five little young entrepreneurs is pretty incredible.
Which, if you haven't been here to the Hawaiian Vanilla Company, there really truly are five young entrepreneurs, the Redicop kids who are part of serving you and selling you things in the gift shop and all that. So it really is a family experience, and it really is, I think that's something that adds to people's enjoyment of their stop here.
Well, I think people want to make a connection when they visit a location, and a lot of times people are just spectators when they come to visit Hawaii, and they're driving by in a motor coach. They never really get out and meet a family and then have a meal together. And when you're having a meal together, something special's happening. You're sharing a memory that you actually take back with you at home. And that's the special thing about this place, is that we're creating these wonderful memories that people just keep coming back and telling their friends about it, and we get more and more visitors each week.
So I tell people that you might be the most patient man in the world, because you work with a plant that flowers, as I understand it, like one day a year, and has to be hand – every single vanilla flower has to be hand-pollinated. Is that – that's correct?
That's true. I think God does have a sense of humor. Farming is very difficult. And from the farming side, and then the manufacturing side, and then to the attraction side, and then marketing and developing, it's just it's a lot to handle. But when you've got a strong family and a strong base, it's what we're supposed to be doing, you know, and the kids see that, and visitors see that, and they always say, wow, I want your children. I want to take your children. They're so polite, and that's just been a process of teaching and just...
It must be a tremendous sense of pride for you.
It is. We're far from over, but the oldest is 17 and the youngest is 9 of 5 children, and I'm starting to look at what I'm going to do when they're all gone. Both my wife and I are starting to look at that. Tracy's writing a cookbook, and so I hope that gets out soon so I can carry her bags around as we travel and do her book signing. And little old me, I'm just going to start another tour company and promote Earthbound Tours and just doing farm-to-table experiences here in Hawaii and have a great time.
There is probably no better experience in the Hawaiian Islands, and certainly not on the Big Island, than coming to the Hawaiian Vanilla Company and having lunch and learning about how vanilla is grown and processed, mm-hmm. and turned into incredible yummy things that you cannot even imagine until you get here. It has absolutely my highest recommendation. And, Jim, I really think it is an example of the future of tourism in the islands. Don't you think, are things like this, like Hawaiian vanilla?
I think our tourism product is lacking that touchy-feely, that fill all five senses kind of experience. You know, we've been dealing with the masses for years, and I think when a traveler can come to the islands and get out into the rural countryside and get onto a farm or a business and walk through that door and meet that family and learn about it and then sit down and have a meal together, it's a golden experience.
Thanks for your time, Jim.
My pleasure.
That's the travel guy, Mark Hoffman, from Sports Leisure Vacations. I'm Tom Romano, and we're nearing the end of our special Hawaii show. I want to remind you that you can check out all the locations that we talked about on the program by simply visiting travelguysradio.com. Coming up, we're going to wrap up the program, and Mark's going to give us a look ahead at what we can expect on the Travel Guys Radio show in 2 weeks. That's coming up next on News Talk 1530. KFBK. This is the Travel Guys Radio Show. I'm Tom Romano. Mark, some final words about next week's show, please.
Tom, it's been a real pleasure sharing a little bit of Hawaii with you over the last hour, just as I have with 20 folks who have been in tow with me over the last week and a half as we have visited Kauai and Oahu and the Big Island of Hawaii in search of those places that not every tourist gets to see, the chocolate farm and the seahorse ranch and some cool places like that. So thanks for coming along with us. In 2 weeks, the Travel Guys will be back. We'll have a very special show for you. Ever since we debuted on Valentine's Day back in February, we have interviewed some fascinating travel experts on this show. We're going to pull together a few of those very special interviews and create a special Thanksgiving thank you program that'll be on 2 weeks from today. I'm Mark Hoffman for Tom Romano. We are the Travel Guys, and you are listening to News Talk 1530 KFBK.